Welcome to Captivate the Room with your host, internationally known voice expert, Tracy Goodwin, an award-winning speaker who has taught hundreds around the globe to make a big impact with their voice. This podcast is for anyone who wants to step onto a bigger stage, make a bigger impact, and have a voice that makes people listen. Presentation matters, and the voice is the missing link. Join in and you'll see why.
Welcome to the podcast, Captivate the Room, episode number 17. I'm your host, Tracy Goodwin, and I teach people how to step into their voice power so they can speak their truth beautifully while making a big impact. You can find out more about me at captivatetheroom.com. And remember, you get 25% off all of my courses with the code PODCAST. Thank you, as always, for your downloads and shares, and simply for being here with a desire to make a big impact with your voice. I am so excited about the guest today, and I cannot wait for you to hear this interview. You are going to glean so many golden nuggets today. I am absolutely honored and delighted to get to share with you today, to get to spend time with Salvador Brigman. Today I have Salvador Brigman with me, who founded the popular blog CrowdCrux, which has been cited by the New York Times, the Wall Street Journal, CNN, and more. Sal helps entrepreneurs raise money on crowdfunding platforms like Kickstarter and Indiegogo. Last year, he helped nearly 400,000 individuals raise money from the crowd through his website, products, newsletter, and forum. Sal, welcome. Thank you so much for being here.
Tracy, I am honored and I'm really happy to be here. And I'm excited about our conversation too. A lot of great topics I think we're going to have for the audience.
I know, for sure. Well, tell the audience just in a nutshell what it is you do on the website, on your products. What does Sal do?
Yeah, sure. So first I'd like to say that I also have a podcast, and Tracy has helped me a lot, specifically with my voice sounding better, really sounding more authoritative, and just sounding the way that I want to sound. So that's sort of where our relationship began. I was seeking out help with my own voice and charisma. But that being said, I started the blog about 3 years ago, and I was really trying to understand this new industry of crowdfunding, of Kickstarter and Indiegogo projects. Like a lot of people, I saw people raising hundreds of thousands of dollars on Kickstarter. I'm like, how are they doing that? And then you'll have some projects that haven't raised any money. And it's just like very fascinating to me. So I started to write about the topic. I started to get more involved in the community. I started Kickstarter forum, a few other websites. And really it just kind of grew from there. And the whole spirit of the concept was to just help and interact with these entrepreneurs and these creators. And I obviously have a marketing background. I have a bit of a tech background, but I don't know all of the answers here. So I kind of branched out and I started to interview people who had actually raised money on these platforms and really dissect and get them down to like, where did they market their campaign? How did they prepare for it? What was their mindset going into the actual fundraising process? And that's where a lot of the growth has come from, has been interviewing these amazing, amazing entrepreneurs who have done amazing things in the world of crowdfunding. So that's sort of where it all came from.
That's so awesome. And that's, you know, I'll never forget the day that we met. We actually met on a blab, and I was just instantly taken with the work that you do. But even more than that, that you got what I did, and that you saw the value and the importance of voice and communication. And certainly for people crowdfunding, that's got to be key.
It totally is. And I think also the reason I saw that at that time was I myself was working on that concept. And I just like understood, wow, this is a huge part of my life I never even thought of before. But specifically with a crowdfunding pitch, the goal here, what I call, is developing rapport at scale. And what that means is you're pitching to a bunch of strangers online. These people don't know you. They have to connect with you over a 2 second span. And they're using your volume, they're using your facial expressions, they're using just your confidence in your own idea as a barometer to, should I listen to this guy or should I go on some funny cat YouTube video? Should I go on Facebook, check out what my friend's up to, or should I listen to learn a little bit more about what this pitch is about? So it's extremely, extremely important. And it really will set you out from the competition also, just having a strong communication style and a strong voice.
Yeah, I love that. And I will never forget, you said in that blab that we were on together, and I don't remember the exact words, but it just slayed me. You said,
afford to not pay attention to it.
Yes.
Something like that.
Yes, it was. It was just, oh my gosh, it was the best golden nugget. And so let's talk about the podcast for a minute. You sound great, by the way. I love the podcast. I've been on the podcast. I think it's such...
It's all the microphone.
yeah. So voices... No. It's you too.
I'm just joking.
So what do you talk about on the podcast? Do you always interview guests?
No, I also now have an Ask Sal portion. So people can leave a voice recording on my website and I can be played back on the podcast. I'll answer it. I'll also add in my own two cents. And so that's a way I can interact with the viewers. Sometimes I'll have a bit of a monologue, you know, just kind of a topic I wanted to speak on. For example, creating new products. That's a recent podcast I had. It was just me. And I was just sharing how I get product ideas, how other people can really research the competition, that kind of stuff. If it's a topic where I think I don't have as much knowledge or really would benefit from having a bit of a discussion, then I'll have on a guest. Which I think is, it's amazing too. We have so many different people raising money on crowdfunding platforms. You have authors, you have people doing comic books. I just had a friend raise money for a theater campaign. They raised over $10,000.
Wow.
For film campaigns. I was just hit up by someone at NYU, a student there, asking me for advice because for some reason their program isn't still new age enough to incorporate crowdfunding really into it. So she's like, can you really raise money for a film campaign? So there's a whole suite of different archetypes that can use this, but I'm not all of those archetypes. So I usually bring on entrepreneurs, creative types, filmmakers to talk about their experience on Kickstarter or some of these other websites.
And your podcast, tell us the name of the podcast again.
It's called Crowdfunding Demystified. It's in the iTunes store, or if you could just go to my website, crowdcrux, crowdcrux.com. It's also there. You can just click on the podcast bar.
And you just had a major milestone in downloads.
I did, yes.
Yeah. That was 30,000?
30,000 downloads, which is pretty phenomenal.
Wow, that's amazing. That's so awesome.
Yeah. I think people in my generation, though, are really biased about that. Like, we'll think that, oh, it's only 30,000 downloads. Like, I see YouTube videos with millions of downloads, you know? We're sort of, like, looking at the big numbers for just, like, eyeball amazing statistics. But if you picture 30,000 people in a room, like, it doesn't even fit in a room. Like, in a stadium, that's incredible to me.
Yeah.
Like, that's amazing my voice has touched that many people.
Yeah, that's so cool. And I think it's just barely been a year, I believe, that you've had that thing going. Or is it a little...
It's been a little bit over a year, but I didn't get serious about it until last summer, I'd say.
Okay, that's fantastic. You do one show a week?
I'll do one show a week now. I used to do actually more than that, but I just couldn't keep up with the schedule. It's really
it's
hard.
Intense. Yeah. Yeah. Uh-huh. Now you just mentioned video and you said something a minute ago about movement. And so I want to talk about video for a minute. You know, I help people with video. I do video. Video is a huge platform for me and you've just branched out into video.
Yes, I have.
Yeah.
I'm still at the very early stages though.
Yeah. But a YouTube channel?
I just started a YouTube channel. I also have a Snapchat channel. Ironically, my Snapchat is growing faster than my YouTube channel, which I have Gary Vaynerchuk to thank for that. sorry about that. I don't know if you know of Gary Vaynerchuk,
mm-hmm.
but he is a very popular social media guru. He wrote the book, Crush It. He just came out with another really great book. And one of the things he's very good at is just identifying when platforms are going to blow up. So like when YouTube was going to blow up, when Twitter was going to blow up, he would get in really early, develop an audience. And then he, you know, obviously has a lot. He just benefits a lot from that. So he really was recommending a lot of people in my area of, blogging or if you're doing marketing of any kind, to get into Snapchat now, because we're seeing just tremendous amounts of attention there, of even from, you know, just the 18 to 30 audience, but still a tremendous amount of early attention, kind of like in the early days of Facebook. So that's why I got into Snapchat. I've seen like a lot more growth there actually than on my YouTube videos. Mm-hmm. But with regard to the channel, I think that video, just for me, it's been a skill set that I've always lacked. I've always been a natural writer. Same with voice, you know, doing podcasts. That's not never something I considered doing. I never considered it a strong suit of mine, to be honest. But I wanted to transition into that and to challenge myself. So video has been a part of that. But it's also just that part that people can discover a video like they can a blog post a year from now, and they can still benefit from it. They can still find out who you are. They can still connect with your business or your content. It's just another form of content marketing.
Really, yeah, cool. Yeah, it really, really is cool. The things that are available now for, you know, I was interviewing somebody just yesterday, and of course we're in the older generation, and we were talking about how, you know, if you wanted to make a video in the early 90s or late 80s, you know, you were looking at $70,000-$80,000 maybe. You know, you had to go, he was a broadcasting television guy. Well, now you pick up your smartphone.
Yeah, and a lot of smartphones have really high quality videos. You know, it's a very, very powerful video production ability. So it's crazy how much it's changed, and it's just gonna keep changing. It's gonna keep changing more quickly, I think. And the people that really get in are gonna have a huge advantage, just a huge competitive advantage.
I agree. I've been saying for 5 years, if people get on video, or you're going to get left behind. End of story. Yeah. So do you think video is key for crowdfunding?
Oh, yes, definitely. I think crowdfunding would be much harder without video. I have seen creators launch successful crowdfunding campaigns without a video, but it's always the ones with the video that are going to connect with strangers, with friends of friends, with people that just happen upon this, like this random Kickstarter page from a Reddit post or a news post or something like that. They're gonna watch the video. Mm-hmm. That's how they're gonna get a 2 second idea of what this product is like or what this pitch is like. They're gonna connect with you, your story, the creator, the person pitching it. That's how they're gonna do it. If you don't have time to read, you know, this super long campaign page, it's important that it's there if we wanna reference it. But the video is really what you use for emotional cues and also just to get information about the product, I think.
Yeah. Do you think we're going to see a trend of a lot less reading and a lot more watching? Emails. Do people, you know, people talk a lot about, well, people aren't reading emails anymore. You need to send a video email.
Yeah.
What do you feel like that in crowdfunding, that, you know, okay, the writing should be there, but the video is maybe even more important?
One other statistic, I know Kickstarter gave a statistic that campaigns with videos on average will raise 50% more versus, I think it was like 25% for campaigns without videos.
Wow.
And on Indiegogo, it's like 100% more. So it's amazing the impact that video has.
Yeah.
But that being said, in terms of the actual communication, it really depends on how people, I think, opted into the email list. So if they know you or they have a rough idea of your product, I think it's okay to leading up to the launch of a campaign to do text. And then they eventually will go to your campaign, they'll watch the pitch video, and they'll be reintroduced to the concept and also you. Mm-hmm. If these are people that have never heard of you, video can be a really powerful way. Just having one or two videos leading up to the launch, people can be like, hey, I like this guy. Like, he sounds cool. I'm going to keep opening his emails. Yeah. It's a very strong rapport building tool. And not everyone is good at developing that level of trust and that level of connection with just copywriting. But some people are. Some people are really good writers, you know, so it really depends.
Right, right. I wonder if we're moving into a phase of a deeper connection, when we make that deeper connection.
Oh, definitely.
I see you, I hear you. You know, if trust is built in the voice, there's just so much can happen so much faster, it seems like, if I can hear your voice.
Definitely. Everyone has their own distribution medium. Everyone is a media network now.
Yeah.
You know, if you have to be, you can start, it's like almost like cable. Like you can start your own podcast, which then generates a relationship with people over time. And then they know as you as that one internet guy, you know, have that small amount of internet celebrity, whereas people who know of your work know who you are. Whereas previously, that's never been the case. Mm-mm. Mm-mm. So now we have to be aware of the different mediums that you can develop that kind of a relationship with.
Yeah. Yeah. So you mentioned earlier filmmakers, things, artists. Let's talk about crowdfunding. Who should crowdfund? What do you see? Do you see everything imaginable across the board crowdfunding?
Well, certainly some people have tried it, but I myself, I think there's a few different types of crowdfunding. For what most people are thinking of it, usually it's for some kind of a project, which is going to have an end result or an end product. So like we go through this creative process of making a film or making a book or whatever it is. And people then, when they pledge to the campaign, they're going to get something out of it. So it's kind of like a pre-order campaign, or they're going to get swag. You know, they're going to get something like the band's new poster. Mm-hmm. They're going to be something that's coming out of this overall effort. It's not just going to be, can you give me money so I can go to the Bahamas and relax on the beach and, you know, sip margaritas or whatever it is. It's not something like that. Now, there are crowdfunding campaigns that are more on a need basis, you know, for medical expenses or for something very dire need based. I don't deal with those types of campaigns as much. I usually focus more on the creative type or entrepreneurial types. And lastly, there are investment crowdfunding campaigns where people will give money, will invest in a new venture, a small amount, like maybe like $5,000, nothing like, you know, $50,000 to $100,000, which would be normal for like an angel round. There'd be a lot of people giving in $1,000 to $5,000 to make this venture happen. That's another form of crowdfunding that's much newer, but that's something that's becoming more popular in, I'd say, the next 2 years. It's probably going to be a lot more popular.
Will we see an expansion in different platforms? And, you know, I remember when Kickstarter started, and that, I think that was just about it. But now you've got GoFundMe. I mean, aren't there a ton of different platforms now?
There's a good number. There's Kickstarter, there's GoFundMe, there's Indiegogo. That's another big player in the space that I'm in. There's peer-to-peer lending platforms like Lending Club, Prosper, and also a lot more now investment crowdfunding platforms. In terms of just like the space I deal with, which is now what's called rewards-based or like creative projects, entrepreneurial projects, I don't think we're gonna see too much more growth there in terms of new platforms, just because it's a marketplace effect. It's very similar to Amazon. You know, once you have this marketplace of people that are interested in new gadgets, new products, they're early adopters, they're really excited, and then you have the creators or the entrepreneurs. Once you have that marketplace, it's really hard to break into that kind of a market. You know, you're not going to have another Amazon show up. It's so hard, the marketplace dynamics. Mm-hmm. So with that type of crowdfunding, I think we're seeing maturation there.
That's so, you know your stuff. People, he knows his stuff. That's so great. But you know, it's such a great, what caught my eye about it initially was, it's so great for creatives. You know, I've been a creative my whole life. I was an actress. I was a director. I'm a, you know, entrepreneur now. And that was always the struggle in the big
funding.
Money. Yeah. I mean, yeah, we'll fund science and no criticism to science and math, but you want to do a play? Okay. Yeah.
It's a skill set. It's really hard to do.
Yeah.
And even the people who have done it around me, that might have, I think, a little bit more knowledge on the social media front or knowledge about marketing, they still say it's really hard. you know, you have to be willing to hustle, to commit to it, put in the work, and really tap your network, specifically for the art projects, like a theater project or a film project. Mm-hmm. For gadgets and gizmos and new fashion items or new design-related items, those kind of products usually will see pledges from like strangers around the world. Mm. Because anyone can own it. You know, anyone can own this product, kind of like Amazon. But if it's a local play, it's really hard to convince someone in California to support you when you're in New York.
Do you think people go into it sometimes with a false expectation that they're going to just put their campaign up and the money's going to start rolling in, and they don't realize the work that goes into it?
I think that's the vast majority of people.
Really?
That was also my thought process when I first started to research the industry, because I'm like, wow, look at this, all this free money. Like, people are just giving money online. How cool is that? But it's not the case. You know, there are always going to be the media examples where that is the case, where it seems like out of nowhere, this person raised a bunch of money for a potato salad or like to do something really silly. And people are like, what? I want to get in on that. But most creators, people on my forum, I have 6,000 members now on my forum, Kickstarter forum, the 10,000 subscribers I have, every one of them has said, wow, I really thought that I was just going to put this up and I was going to, money was going to tumble in. But for most people, that's not the case. You know, it's all in the preparation. It's all in the having an amazing project or product. And lastly, what I specialize in is the marketing component. How do you get people to care about it? How do you get people to visit it? And how do you get people to back that actual crowdfunding campaign?
Mm-hmm. And your forum is amazing. It is chock full of fantastic information, and it's very interactive. You've got people that are involved in it. You know, you can have a forum where nobody's doing anything, but yours is quite active. I want to talk about the mistakes that people make, but before I do, I had this on my list and you just mentioned it. What was the success strategy of the sandwich?
The
potato salad. For those of you that don't know that, and you may be, maybe you should tell it. My son brought it to my attention and we followed it. It was amazing.
I would be curious as to how that came on your rate, like how that came on your radar, what your thoughts were of that.
Well, my son, I have a teenager and he watches YouTube and he reads constantly on his iPad, and it came up on a stream somewhere. Mm-hmm. And he told me about it. He said, this guy is raising money for potato salad and he's already made like $50,000 or something. And this was still early on. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure what he initially made. Mm-hmm. But my son just happened to see it on, I'm not sure if he saw it on YouTube or if it just popped up on one of the things that he, you know, he reads a lot on there. But we became fascinated with it because, you know, I was familiar with crowdfunding. I had considered crowdfunding in the past, and it just blew my mind that this guy was making this kind of money because he wanted to make potato salad.
Oh yeah, that's a really interesting, it's a very interesting and strange story. But I want to just hone in on one thing you said was it came up in your son's social media feed. Mm-hmm. And that really distinguishes how news travels nowadays. Mm-hmm. You don't hear about it as much now initially on the front page of a newspaper or in even in your email inbox. You go on, log on Facebook and like, look at this guy who's raising money. I'm going to tell a friend, look at this, right? And all the people in the office space crowd around the computer and be like, what? Like, I have to share my friend. I have to share this on my wall. Like, this is crazy.
Yeah.
So the thing here is, why is it that this spread? Well, it's amazement and humor. Things always are going to spread online because of the emotion that they evoke. And for this, it was funny. No one had done it before. The amazement aspect, like, how is this guy raising this money? Oh my God, he's going to have to make so much potato salad. Like, this is hilarious. I'm going to give like a dollar to this just so I say I did. Like, just it shows something about me that I'm also funny if I give a dollar. Like, you know, I'm joining in with this humor. So that I think that really hones in on why it actually spread. Mm. and why people were giving. Later on, he did agree to do some kind of a charity event, I know, related to the campaign. But it spread for the same reason that funny dog videos spread, or like just funny GIFs will spread online, I think. So it's really the emotion that it evoked, I think.
Yeah, I love that. And that's so spot on. And that feeling of connection. I love what you said about that. I can be a part of this. I can be a part of this funny thing. I can be a part of this phenomenon. And yeah, my son just told me, I think last week, because I asked, we've got to talking about it again. And this was months ago that this happened. And he said that he had donated a tremendous amount of money to, I believe it was children's cancer research, I think is what my son said.
That's good.
Yeah. So it was such an amazing thing. So you mentioned emotion, connection, all of those things. Plus what, if you had to give us one or two key things that make a campaign successful,
yeah,
can we nail it down?
Yeah, definitely. The first one is you have to do something that people want to happen in the world. Like the difference between an artist, or let's just say the difference between a writer, because I love writing, and an author, is that a writer has no audience. They have no intention of showing their work to anyone. They don't really care if anyone likes it. They're doing it because they themselves wanted to exist in the world. And that's amazing. That's great. I myself love to do a lot of writing projects. I have no expectations for, I'm not writing for anyone. There's no specific audience. But the difference between an author is, an author has a very specific audience. They're creating this product for someone else to consume. So they have to think about, how is that person going to read it? How is that person going to find out about it? How is it going to impact them? What kind of action are they going to take as a result of consuming it? Or how is it going to change their life? You know? So a crowdfunding campaign, you really need to come from the mindset of that author, where you're making this for someone else. All too often I see creators putting something up because they want it to exist, but no one else does. And it is a tool you can use to gather followers or to get people connected who are interested in this, but you should have already done some validation that there is at least a crowd out there that you've been connecting with that is interested in seeing this gadget or this project happen. Because if no one cares, it's really going to show on launch day. Mm-hmm. So that pre-launch activity can be really crucial.
So that audience, just like in storytelling, that's where I see people make a mistake. They're so bogged down in what I want to tell that they forget to think about what the audience needs to hear.
Exactly. Very true.
Yeah.
That even just extends to so many other areas. If you're trying to get an influencer to tweet about your campaign, or to get them to write about you or have you on your podcast, so often we think like, will you please have me on your podcast? Like, please, please, please. Like, it means so much to me. You're not really thinking about what value you're bringing them. Mm-hmm. You're not thinking about how you can enhance the whole career that they might have going, or what they're trying to do with their life. But when you come from that frame, like, hey, I just launched a Kickstarter campaign. I have a lot of experience about theater. I learned so much putting together this campaign. I'd love to share what I've learned with your listeners, or I'd love to share my theater experience with your theater podcast listeners, what I've learned over the last 20 years or something. And then I'll also maybe talk about my campaign a bit.
That's such good advice. That is so valuable. It's so valuable in everything, you know? And that's just where I see so many, they don't quite understand why it's not clicking. But they're too bogged down in their story and what they want and their goal, mission, objective, that they're, you know, it's that bark view. We see the bark, but we don't see the trees.
Yeah, very true. Know,
much less the forest.
It's really hard to do, though. I mean, I myself will make this mistake, all the time, where I just am thinking too much in my own mind, like what I want. I'm like, oh, like I need to stop and to think about what this other person, what their perspective is, how they view me, all that kind of stuff. Like, they don't know maybe what I do. I have to then approach them in the way they want to be approached.
I love that. And that's fantastic advice right there. Just that word, stop. Because we go and we go and we push and we push and we try a different angle. And all of that's important. But to stop and remember, and I struggle with this, and I've been doing this, good grief, forever. they don't know what I know.
Yeah.
So I have to make that clear. And that's my job. So, okay, so that's a great tip on how to make that campaign successful. But where do you see the biggest mistakes?
Ooh, the biggest mistakes. Okay, so there's two mistakes I'll say.
Great.
One is, for the type of campaigns I do, which are Kickstarter and Indiegogo campaigns, if the creator is successful, they then have to ship out all of these rewards to their backers. Like, it's not just free money. Like, there are obligations there. Mm-hmm. So they don't take into account shipping costs, the cost to actually fulfill these rewards, how much time it's going to take, how much labor they're going to need. Also, like, how to do surveys, or like if different t-shirt colors, like all these different variations they don't think about as much. Or what if their goal is 10,000, they end up raising 100,000. Now they have all of these boxes to ship out. How is that going to impact their costs? And unfortunately, there have been some creators who are unable to ship out the rewards because they actually end up owing money after the campaign because they didn't take into account all of these costs and how they might fluctuate depending on the number of rewards they have to ship out. So that's a huge mistake that I'll see. Just that to me, a successful crowdfunding campaign, it isn't until you actually ship out the rewards, people have it in their hands, and they can say, wow, this is cool. That's when a successful campaign happens. It's not when you raise the money. It's when you fulfill the obligations.
What a bummer. You do all that work and you don't really quite put the math and everything together, and then you end up owing money.
Yeah, it's a nightmare. And it's just something to be aware of. You got to be aware of it going in. It's scary, definitely.
Yeah.
Another big mistake I would see is failing to just invest in the campaign. You used to be able to get by on Kickstarter or Indiegogo, which is sort of like a very amateur video with a very amateur campaign page. And that was fine. There wasn't very much competition. But nowadays, you have firms that are putting out very high quality videos, very high quality campaign pages that go through in depth all of the components, or like the risks, all the kind of stuff you would love to know about the campaign. So to stand out, you really need to up the bar with the actual campaign page in terms of putting together a high quality video and high quality campaign messaging.
Yeah, that's great advice. You mentioned, you know, and that's so true. I see that everywhere. I see the caliber of the videos and things that are coming out of everywhere much stronger than they were. I mean, 8 years ago, sure, I could sit on my kitchen floor and, you know, it was totally fine. But now, I mean, I'm not saying don't do it. You know, you start where you start, but there's some good stuff being pumped out.
It is, yes.
Stuff. So how competitive is it in this world to get funded? I mean, what's the comp? I mean, is it just getting crazy competitive out there?
It is getting really competitive. And it's specifically in, you know, there are the two niches, I call it. The first niche is, like I said before, the design gadgets and like fashion design, technology kind of products that are having an end kind of product that you can ship out to people. That's really where I think it's becoming very competitive, because people do see, wow, there are strangers out there who will back a campaign. This is like a really ripe ground for developing a new product or getting marketing out there for a product I've been working on. You know, just having lots of eyeballs on it, lots of new backers, lots of new customers. So that's becoming very competitive. In terms of the arts funding, I don't think that is as competitive, just because most of the funds come from the individual's own marketing and social media efforts. But that being said, not on the Kickstarter platform, but overall, there are more and more creative types, more and more nonprofits that are using online, using social media to develop a relationship with donors and backers and patrons of the arts. So that in itself, the whole channel is becoming more noisy and more competitive. So I think, though, in that case, the best way to stand out is having a narrative or having a story that really connects with your backer base or your donors for your nonprofit, or if it's a creative project, the people that are into these kinds of stories and into this kind of genre or theater lovers, you have to have a narrative that's going to really focus and captures their attention.
Mm-hmm. That's really good. And you've given us so many great, I was going to ask, how do people set themselves apart? And that's basically what you just said. That story. And I mean, you've given us so many other tips, have the great video and write the great page and do the work and have a great voice. I had to throw that in. and all of these other wonderful things, know the audience. But you mentioned story. How important is story? And do people tend to forget that part?
I would say also, and this is going to sound callous, but most of the things in life are commodities. So if it's another book, it's another TV episode, it's another film, it's another Broadway project, another whatever, it's a commodity in someone's viewing of it, because there are so many opportunities in your social media feed. There are so many of these things going on. There's so many book launch parties. It appears like a commodity. So the name of the game is you have to stand out. And that all comes down to marketing. And we all know that storytelling is a very important form of marketing, because, for example, if you go up and you give a speech, people might remember one or two things from that speech. They might remember one or two important information, things, or facts. If you tell a story, people are going to remember that story if it's engaging. And they're probably going to mention it later when they're with their friends, like, wow, I heard this really amazing story the other day that this speaker told. It was just so moving. It just spreads in such a more exponential fashion. I think just human beings are wired to pay attention when someone's telling a story, to wait for the end of the story, and also to gain knowledge or to gain insights from that story. Rather than just listening to facts in chronological order, we just will tune out after like 5 to 10 minutes. Mm-hmm. But a story will keep us captivated in a dark theater for 2 hours,
Yeah.
Or even at a speech, it'll keep us captivated for 30 minutes.
Well, and don't you think part of that is because we connect with each other through certain parts of the story? Happened to you? Oh my God, that happened to me.
Yeah, I totally think that's the case. It's also we're naturally curious people. We want to find out what's happening next. We want to find out, why is this person thinking this way? Or why did this character do this? Or why were they so motivated to do this? Or you find out something about someone in the context of a story, and you're like, wow, that was an amazing event or a horrific event. Like, what happened next? Like, how did you climb up and get away from that horrible time in your life? Or like all these types of things. It's like a curiosity gap, I think.
Yeah. Oh, I agree. I absolutely agree. And I think that's what the whole tabloid industry is based on.
Yeah. Definitely.
Why do you pick up the magazine at the grocery counter? Because you want to read about these people's lives.
Or in my generation, BuzzFeed, people probably know what BuzzFeed is. That's a website that has a lot of clickbait. It's called headlines, where it's like, find out this one reason why, blah, blah, blah.
I think I see people being a little hesitant to tell their stories out of fear of the vulnerability of what people will think. Do you see that in the crowdfunding or not so much?
No, I do definitely see that. I mean, I myself feel that fear sometimes as well. I think it's the fear of being too open, being too naked. Mm-hmm. A lot of people who read my blog or listen to my podcast that aren't from a native English speaking country, they're also a little bit shy or embarrassed about the language gap, about maybe not coming across in such a way that they sound, English, or like they sound acceptable. And I always tell them, like, it's fine. It's not everywhere that you're going to meet a native English speaker. Like, it's fine. But there's sort of that embarrassment aspect but also that it just sounds, I think people are like, why would anyone care about this? You know?
Yeah. We doubt ourselves so much.
Yeah, definitely.
We start thinking about what they're thinking about. And you know what my saying on that is, what do people think about you? They don't. Mm-hmm. And talk, you know, say that again, that sounds callous, but we just give all our power away. People are thinking, they might be thinking we're awesome.
Maybe, yeah, definitely.
You know, but it's interesting you brought that up about the native speakers. I see a lot of that in my accent neutralization work, and that's a big issue for a lot of people. They've really lost a lot of self-confidence out of that fear of, I'm going to say it wrong. I'm going to sound different.
Yeah. So much of learning to become, I think, more proficient online and also just in your life is discovering your own voice and also discovering the stories that make up who you are or why it is that you do what you do.
So oh my gosh.
That's amazing the work that you do. You help so many people, I think, with this aspect.
Well, I do. I mean, that's my whole world. And so I'm a pretty big cheerleader on it. I have to keep it in perspective. But I think that the voice is the most powerful tool that we have if we know how to use it. But I love the way you just reframed that. You said, find their own voice. And I think that is so key. I want to see what you think, but I think we get a little too caught up in, oh, I got to be like them. I gotta be like, that guy's successful. I'm gonna act like him. I'm gonna do what he does. Do you see that some?
I think it's natural for just our human intellect rationalizing. We think, well, this guy sounds like this. People like him. If I sound like this, people are gonna like me. Mm-hmm. Or this person looks this way. If they're getting, you know, they have people that love them and their appears like they love them on social media. If I look this way, then people will love me. Yeah. And it just doesn't work that way. People like them because they're acting authentically, because they are who they are, you know? And that's really the only person you can be is yourself, that no one else can be.
Yeah.
It's a huge advantage to you if you do embrace it and you feel comfortable in your skin. That strength, that identity is going to stand out to your readers, your listeners, to whoever's interested in your product. It's really going to stand out.
I couldn't agree more. And I think when we talk about breaking through all that noise, that's got to be key. Just being yourself. And this is who I am. This is what I've done. This is what I've got. I'm really excited about it. What do you think?
Kind of thing. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's so great. So you are an amazing speaker, and you are just
a writer.
You do the podcast. You got the videos. Was speaking always easy for you?
No, not at all.
Really?
I even don't think I'm a great speaker right now. I think I'm getting better. But for me, I used to be petrified of speaking. It was only once I realized I needed to speak in order to achieve a goal, which for me was, you know, becoming an entrepreneur, connecting with people. I hated networking events too. Like, I felt very just introverted, very embarrassed. I thought everyone's looking and just judging me. So I really had to overcome a lot of these things in my own life, specifically with the public speaking, just being comfortable up there, being able to articulate what I'm thinking and not being frozen. Mm-hmm. You know, that was a huge challenge for me. So it was never a natural thing. I think it's very rare that you find a natural speaker.
Well, you've done an amazing job, and it sounds like you would probably say that's key for all entrepreneurs, is to, if that is a problem, to put work on it, push through it. It's essential.
I think it's communication is always essential. It's more essential for some types of entrepreneurs. Like, you are going to have the different types. Like, you have someone who's a coder, a programmer. They're going to be spending most of their day in front of the computer. They're doing something really important for the company. Mm-hmm. Like, you have someone like a Mark Zuckerberg. Eventually, he's going to have to communicate with a team of people. Mm-hmm. But just starting out, maybe he should be focusing more on his sole craft of programming. Mm-hmm. But for people that are looking to be more of the leaders of the company, people that are looking to really gain new clients, then communication is going to be just, that's the bread and butter of the ball game. You know, that's something that you have to get right if you want to succeed in that a people-driven world. So
yeah, and that's sounds like it's just a big part of the crowdfunding thing.
It is. It's a huge part. It's also something that I've learned just so much about doing the podcasts. I think I'm on episode 80 now. I've learned a tremendous amount just about speaking and about presenting myself with the podcast, and something I'm continuing learning, you know, this day. So,
well, and you, it sounds to me like you did, you know, Marie Forleo says, start before you're ready. Because if you wait, you know, if you wait until your hair's just right and you got the perfect outfit and the perfect setup and the perfect, I see that all the time. That day may never come. And so you've got the fear, you've got this, you've got that. You just push on through because you're going to learn as you go.
Yeah, it's the philosophy I had with podcasting was sort of like, everyone's like, no, you need to like schedule the launch. You need to be very focused about the first month of the podcast. I'm like, I just need to start talking and like start getting podcasts out there and start experimenting. That's sort of my personality. I remember when I first started learning how to write well, I used to write in these huge paragraphs, like very long paragraphs, run-on sentences. It was horrible. But over time, you get better at it.
Yeah.
You know, and now a lot of people say like, wow, you're a really good writer, or like you have very good prose. It's very readable. It wasn't always like that, you know.
Yeah.
You just learn as you go, you fine tune, and that's sort of how it works.
Yeah. I love that. I absolutely love that. Now, you have a course.
I do, yes.
Tell us about that.
So I have a few different digital products. I have two ebooks and this online course where I'll teach people how to raise money on Kickstarter and how to really go about marketing the campaign, which I think is, at least from the 6,000 creators I've dealt with on my forum, that's like the hardest part is the actual marketing of the campaign. You have people who are very creatively driven, who have never thought about that before, who have never thought of the marketing mindset of how do you get people to care. You know, I think that people come from the perspective that just because I created this artwork or just because I made this product, people should be a path to my door. And that's not how it works anymore. That's just not how the world functions. So with my course, I teach people, I bring them through really the step-by-step process of how to get people to your campaign, how to get backers, how to get people interested. And this is really like a proven process. You know, I've been doing this for 3 years. I've watched many different creators and entrepreneurs use this process, and I just detailed it and laid it out so that anyone can implement it and they can just have a much faster understanding of what it is they're doing online, I think.
Yeah, it sounds like you really just speed up that learning curve a lot.
That's the whole goal. I mean, if you don't want to spend, you know, months and months learning this, I think it's something where it's much more compressed. It's going to focus your learning efforts. And ultimately, the result there is going to be raising money for your passion or raising money for that project or whatever it is you want to do.
Mm-hmm.
That's the result of the course.
It's so cool. I didn't realize you had a marketing background. As much as I know about you, I didn't realize that. And that has certainly been my albatross over the years. And probably the thing that many, many people struggle with. And I know it's always been important, but it seems to me like it's more important than ever as the marketplace gets more crowded.
A lot of the marketing that I do is what I think older generations don't even consider to be marketing. So like, for example, putting out blog posts, mm-hmm. a lot of people are like, well, you can make money with that. Or like, well, like, why are you doing that? That takes so much time. That takes so much effort. Why are you doing podcasts? Like the whole goal with that type of marketing, which is primarily what I do is content marketing, is to develop a relationship with the customer. And then a certain percentage of people join my email list, or a certain percentage are interested in my course or the other products that I have. So I come from a different marketing background, I think, than most, because I started online, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
So I understand this world a little bit better. But for other people, it's like, why did you just spend your whole Sunday writing a blog post that's free for everyone to read?
Yeah.
Like, it makes no sense.
Well, and it's so fascinating that you have that and you do that, because I am that generation. You know, we picked up the phone and we said, hey, you don't know me, but how about I take you to lunch and we talk about you working with me? Sure, where you want to go? You don't get an executive on the phone anymore. That's never going to happen. You know, it's the times have changed so dramatically. And I think for many of the people, not for everybody, I don't speak for everyone, but for many of the people of my generation, the learning curve has been steep.
Yeah, I mean, it's something where I think it's a really hard transition, but I also think it's part of a limiting belief, you know? I think like, oh, this looks all so new. It's going to take so much to learn this. Like, I could never do this. I'm going to put this off. Like, this is for the young kids over there. Gary Vaynerchuk, the guy that I was talking about earlier, he's 40 years old.
Yeah.
This guy is doing really new age stuff on Snapchat. Most people 18 to 25 are doing this. He's 40, but he's just committed to learning the new platforms. And that's kind of, I think, the belief system you have to have. Like, this is learnable. Like, these are not rocket science kids that are learning this. Like, these are kids that don't know what to do with their time and they just pick up and learn about an app. You know, like, you can learn it also.
It's so true. And I love what you said about the belief. And, you know, for years, I just I had that belief. I can't do this. I don't know. I don't know how to build a funnel. What's a funnel? That's something in the kitchen. I don't understand any of this. I'm never going to make it. And then one day I just said, okay, so you loved the 80s. That's okay. Nobody's going to take that away from you. But you can do this, Tracy. You can.
Yeah. I mean, I feel that the same way with some of the things I'm doing. Like, I have to learn about new platforms like Instagram, or like, how do I market on that? I'm so used to Twitter. Like, I don't want to transition. So I can only imagine someone who, if you've been doing something that works for 20 years or 10 years even, and now it's not working as well, you have to go this whole new path. It's like, I don't want to do that. Why can't I just hire someone to do that? Or like, what is this? What is that? You just have to sort of accept the fact that this is going to take some time to learn, but it's going to be worth it. And I'm going to meet so many cool people. I'm going to grow my business so much more. Like, this is something I'm going to make fun for me. I'm not going to make it a chore. I'm going to make this fun. I'm going to share this knowledge with new people also, like at parties. Like, it's just going to be a fun experience.
That's so key and so true. And it's just like everything. Voice work is the same way. It's not something you do forever. You learn it and then you got it. Golf swings, football, I mean, everything, you have to learn it. And once you do, you've got it. Now, granted, in technology, things are always improving and changing and you keep learning, but we're not going back. You know, we're not going back. So I think there's definite value in that advice. You know,
it adds so much value to your life when you're willing to challenge yourself also, because when you're only executing, when you're only doing things you know how to do, it's fun. I mean, it can be very enjoyable, but there's that missing X factor when you're actually doing things that push you a little bit beyond your comfort zone and you're pushed a little bit beyond what you think you can do. And eventually you master it, you're like, wow, like, I did that? Like, that's so cool. You know, that really just is an amazing high
it is.
We'll get. And it's value for your own life.
It's so true. It's so true. I go back to the funnel story. Everybody's talking, you got to build a funnel. I don't want to build a funnel. I put that, you know, and we do. That's what we do. We put it off. I don't know it. I don't want to learn it. I can't learn it. I'm not going to do it. When I learned to do it, it was like, oh my gosh, this is so easy. I spent the whole day building funnels. You know,
you build it up in your mind to be bigger than it is.
Yes. So it's so much of it is that belief and that fear of change.
Very true. I mean, I also have that same stuff. I'll put off stuff. I do what I call procrastinating with work. So I'll do some work that I really should not do, but I'm focused on. And I really should be focused on something else, but I'm like, I don't want to do that. I'll do this other stuff. And I feel like I'm getting stuff done, but I'm really not.
Yes. Oh my gosh. I'm so glad you said that. That makes me feel so much better about my life because I'm the master of that. And then I look at it and I'm like, well, wait a minute. I just did all the easy stuff that I like. And I keep setting the stuff to the side that's going to be harder.
Yeah.
But
I'm totally guilty of doing that.
Yeah. I think, well, again, it goes back to that human nature. I think that we're just geared to do things, certain things, and we just have to learn to do them different.
Very
well, that's just great. Well, Sal, tell you've got so many platforms that people can find you on. Just give us the laundry list. Give us the rundown, the website, the podcast. I know we've said it, but give it all to us again, where people can find you.
Well, I really actually just love people to go to one place, and that is crowdcrux.com, crowdcrux.com. If you start there, you can get on my email list. You'll start to find out about these other websites as they become necessary. So as you're asking questions, you'll probably find Kickstarter form. Or as you're looking for more information, eventually I can tell you about my eBooks or my course. But really, if you start there, I think that's the simplest way for people to find out about crowdfunding if they're interested in that. And also, if you're interested in any of my thoughts on voice and what I've learned about podcasting, you can always shoot me an email about that also, because I'm learning about that as well. So
that's great. And that probably keeps the overwhelm for people down a little bit, to go to that one spot and kind of take it in as they need it.
Yeah, I think that'll help. It's just so hard. Man, there are thousands of things you can do every single day. You have so many items on your to-do list. Maybe you can go to three of my sites to say that's work, like we were saying before. But I think really having that one destination is just going to help people. And it's a lot of my best content there. So,
and there is good content there, people. I'm telling you, I've been following Sal ever since the day I met him, not just because he is such a proponent of voice and voice work and having a great voice, but I just love his work. I love his writing, his information. It's just value and more value. So his stuff is amazing. And I'm going to put the website in the show notes as well. So don't worry if you didn't get a chance to write it down, you'll have access to it. And
definitely,
you can get to Sal.
I also want to share before we go, just one thing two things that I learned from you and your voice work that has really just helped my own podcasting and also my now starting to do YouTube channels. And the first one was, I very distinctly remember a problem I had was I didn't sound very confident when I was speaking. And even though myself, I had been working in this industry for a long time, I had been helping entrepreneurs, helping creative types. I had a lot of confidence with what I thought the best practices are, or even just in the entrepreneurship realm. I have a lot of confidence as a guy, but I wasn't coming across that way. And I didn't understand why. I was why do I sound like I'm this newcomer to this space when I've been doing this for so long? And my own, I'm very rational, analytically minded. I'm not as emotionally intelligent. So I sought out your advice and you're like, Sal, you need to drive to the end of the line when you're talking. You need to make sure that you end strong, because that's what people are going to remember. Mm-hmm. And once I started to do that, I wouldn't trail off. I'd focus more on ending with a bang. That's when I started to sound much more confident in what I was saying, which was awesome, because that was very congruent with how I felt. Mm-hmm. And the second tip, I think, was that really when we're talking in a stage, or we're talking to someone at a cocktail party, they can see our body language. Mm-hmm. They can see how we're standing. They can see how just we're looking at them, all that kind of stuff. As a podcaster, I'm here maybe in my pajamas, or I'm hunched over. I'm talking about the subject. I don't really think about how my body language looks. I'm just saying, I'm delivering information. I'm not paying attention to how I'm delivering it. And you really made me think about, your voice, your body is the instrument here. Mm-hmm. If you want to be confident, you have to have a very confident pose while you're talking. Even if there's no one else here in this room, I'm just talking to someone around the world, that's going to reflect in my actual voice. Mm-hmm. It might be subconscious, but it's really going to play into how confident I sound. Mm-hmm. And that was my the thing I wanted to improve on. So then once I start to be more confident, even having hand gestures, things that I would normally do when I'm talking, that's what really helped me transmit that confidence into the microphone and then to the podcast listeners and the viewers. So thank you for that.
Oh, you are welcome. That's good stuff. And And Sal had sent me a recording, and I listen to recordings all the time for people. And, you know, instantly this is what we need to do right here. And that drive to the end is a big issue for so many people. They drop off at that ending.
Yeah.
And that, you know, they're not thinking, I don't think you were thinking, oh, well, clearly I'm not sounding confident because I'm dropping off at the end. We don't even realize what we're doing because we've established these patterns.
I had no idea.
Yeah. Yeah. And just by propping up those endings, it's like, this is my story and I'm going to tell it and you're going to listen to the end versus, well, this is my story and I'm going to tell you, you know,
yeah.
And we drop it off. That's what they're perceiving.
Exactly.
This guy.
That was a big change in my podcast. So thank
you. Yeah. Oh, I'm so excited about that. I think this stuff is good stuff and it works. And, you know, the voice is the carrier of the message. The voice is the orchestra of the heart. So we have to connect that mind, body, and voice to really, really make that impact. And that's what you do. That's what you've done. You sought it out. You learned it, you applied it, and you're just out there killing it. And I couldn't think of anybody that I'm more excited about than you.
Oh, thank you so much.
Yeah, just that doing such great things out there in the world. I just think you're the best, Sal.
Thanks a lot.
And thank you so much for being here. I know the listeners are going to get so much from the time that you've shared with us. So thank you.
Definitely.
Is there anything else you want to add before we go?
If I could add one thing, that would be, if you've listened to this podcast, you've taken all of this amazing value, all of this content, all the advice I've shared and Tracy has shared, do something with it. Take action in some way. You know, don't just go back to your life and be like, wow, I learned a lot. No, do something with it. Take a small action. If you're trying to launch a crowdfunding project, research or put together a draft page, talk to that business partner finally about it. Just take some kind of action towards your goal. After you've listened to this.
That's a great tip. That's a great final tip. Well, thank you again, Sal, for being here. Thank you, listeners, as always. I'm so grateful to have you. And you know, you can find me over at CaptivateTheRoom.com. And you can find out more information about Sal in the show notes. And we'll see you next time.
See you guys next time.